Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host, Wheel of Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined by Ricky Addington and Chris Morgan.
Your number one source for news.
Crimson Paladins, guys.
And Val Heffelfinger.
Solo billing.
With this Val Heffelfinger.
This has been a big week for Games Workshop news. I mean, we have beta, Bolter rules. We have a female commissar model.
Lady Commissar.
We got
and book coming out for her. I'm excited about that.
We got Funko Pops, which look.
Yeah, what's that all about?
I was pretty strong. I'm like, I'm going to be able to resist. And then they showed me that Blood Angel Funko Pop, and I'm like, I got to get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going on my desk at work. It's going to happen.
I was good, and I was like, what is that one in a hood? And then it was a Dark Angel. I was like, crap. Oh, you got me.
These are things that I didn't know I knew what they were until I saw the shape and like what it was. And I was like, oh, I've seen those 1,000 different places. I'd never knew that they were called Funko Pops or that it was a thing.
I don't know that if I've ever voiced an opinion on this stuff, but there's been a lot of resistance out in our community about what it was, that the books that are coming out that are geared towards children for 40K.
Yeah.
And
the Warhammer 40K Adventures or whatever.
Yeah, that's it. The Warhammer Adventure books. I'm all about it. I'm all for it.
But like Funko Pop isn't, I don't get the impression it's geared towards like kids. It's geared towards like your secretary
or something. It's distinctly like, not grim dark.
It's geared towards cubicle stuff and like something for your bookshelf.
Well, I mean, the more I think, I mean, this, I was all for it originally, but then I hear, you know, the David Tennant and Billy Piper are going to be doing the voiceover for the audio, but I'm like, get me in this. I wish it was out for Christmas. It would have been, something that I got for my youngest son. I mean, this is one of those things to where, like, and then when you start to hear all this stuff, you know, with people's comments, and not, this is not the majority, but you see these comments about people that feel like it's damaging or assaulting what their opinion of 40K is. And then it makes me think, I'm a big comic fan. I'm a big fan of the X-Men and Spider-Man. But then, you know, there's a lot of IP out there about those characters that's specifically geared to like infants and stuff. And that doesn't damage my opinion of what I like about the IP.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's like Star Wars. You know, Star Wars has stories set in that universe for every age group. You know, every big IP has done that. And, you know, I'm sorry if you're an adult and you can't separate the stuff that's geared for a child and understand that children don't necessarily need to enjoy the same universe in the same way as you.
I would argue that the fear is that 40K becomes like Star Wars, where the main through line is targeted at the 8-year-old rather than the girl. That's the fear.
Like, I wouldn't go out and get like a Friday the 13th comic for, you know, my 8-year-old.
I don't know about you guys though. Like, what this has sparked in me is like, how old was I when I first considered the Grimdark as my as my favorite place to hang out? Like, I was like 12.
Yeah, I was 14. Like, yeah,
I do think,
yeah, it was about then.
I do think this stuff challenges, you know, what we think is the only thing possible, the only way to enjoy this lore, possibly. But I'm saying that I'm really cool with these other ways to do it. Like, I don't know that I'm going to put the Funko Pop on my desk at work, but I am going to get it. It doesn't make me imagine less about what that chainsword is going to do to orcs and stuff. Like, it doesn't really challenge that. But I'm happy this kind of stuff exists. And I'm sure if the story's good, I'm going to be a fan of the story. I'm going to be looking for ways to enjoy it with my younger kids. That's it.
Yeah. And I think awesome. I think I said it already when it first announced. It's, you know, I've got a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old, and they already love Warhammer. You know, they already play Warhammer with me. You know, my 9-year-old already has
tables
his
and stuff. I mean, you're all in with this.
Yeah, and so like my whole family, except my wife, God love her, she does not. But like, you know, we enjoy this together. But you know, my kids aren't going to sit down and really get the full enjoyment of watching horses fall and, you know, like false gods and stuff. You know, it's like that's a bit above their level right now. But if they can, you know, read, you know, these stories or listen to the audiobook, you know, at their age and enjoy the Warhammer universe and talk to me about it and engage with it on their level, that's fantastic. And I just don't – You know, I just don't understand how somebody can.
Have you contemplated how you'll answer the question, Daddy, what are Drukhari?
Yeah.
Well, Drukhari is a comedian.
He's a
host the Price is Right right now.
He's a comedian into some kinky stuff. Nothing more.
But that's the thing is, like, we can, you know, these stories will, you know, ideally, you know, touch on the subjects that make the universe, the 40K universe, what it is, but gear it less towards, you know.
But see, where I'm saying is these things can exist independently and they never have to conflict with each other. They never do because it just doesn't. I mean, I'm not trying to change
anybody's
mind.
Yeah, let's not forget, too, that, like, young adult fiction, and I don't know if this is young adult fiction, but, like, is some of the most dominant stuff in general that is being bought. Like, the Harry Potter series is an easy low-hanging fruit.
That's
but
fair. Twilight.
You know, like, it can very easily become incredibly mainstream. And that's my number one fear, actually, is, like, going to a cocktail party or, like, some sort of function and someone being like, hey, you guys seen this new, like, miniseries about Warhammer? Like, what's this all about? And I'm like,
tell me about what the Necrons do.
And have you guys seen this thing? Like, chaos? Like, what's that about? And it's like, just as if they were talking about White Walkers. Because this could happen someday, guys, where normies.
That's awesome.
What we spent all of our time talking about.
I honestly think people are scared of that.
GW would love that.
No, I know GW would love that, but I think, and I think there are some fans out there who are scared of that because, and I felt that way when Star Wars became more mainstream. I don't know if any of y'all ever had that happen, but, like, I remember getting picked on in school, in elementary school, because I was a nerd because I liked Star Wars. And there was, like, four friends that liked Star Trek and Star Wars, and I could talk to them about it, but then other people would be like, oh, you bunch of nerds. And that now all of a sudden Star Wars is mainstream and everybody's watching Star Wars and all this stuff. And so there's kind of this feeling of, like, you know, I suffered for that and now no one else had to, you know? And so
everybody's always building off of the successes of those who came before. That is what it means to be part of
society. I mean, like, think of these amazing shorts that have been published to YouTube recently that really demonstrate to me how compelling the 40K universe could be in a well-executed either, you know, animation or, you know, I'm sure live action could be handled with enough budget. Like, clearly this stuff could work. And I don't know how I feel about that.
We've got some great storytellers, too, so far as 40K fiction is concerned. I mean, you take someone like Aaron Dembski Bowden, you know, Guy Haley, Dan Abnett, obviously. I mean, the Guardians of the Galaxy is kind of his child. They took it in a bit different direction from the comics, of course, but that became pretty mainstream, I would say, right? We've got some talented people who could write for those medium, and we could definitely see something awesome come out of that. And I'm all for it. I'm excited about that Blood Angels animated series that's coming out, because that's done by the guy who did the Hell's Reach thing, and he did that just on his own, right?
Yep.
And that was awesome. That was fantastic.
I think I read that he used what they call the Xbox Kinect to do the mocap.
That's funny.
It's amazing. I mean, it's really, really resourceful and awesome.
No, it was good. Man, again, I think this is a big news week. And although we're not getting too many 40K releases, we did get that Bolter Discipline beta rule. And has there been a beta rule that's been introduced that has not eventually made it its way into the rules?
No,
I don't think there's been a beta rule that. I mean, I think there's been some changes to some of the betas, but they've all eventually ended up in there.
Now this is off of a leak from White Dwarf, and I'm really curious to see how this rules in White Dwarf thing pans out as the year goes on, because that's a pretty game changing thing that's now in just a monthly magazine.
So
that you might miss the chance to grab.
For those that did not subscribe to White Dwarf, but, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, maybe longer than that or whatever, the whole chapter approved used to be articles within White Dwarf.
I think you're talking like a decade or more.
Could be. Yeah. I mean, it's been quite some time. So chapter approved were things that were articles from White Dwarf that became, they would compile them and release them as chapter approved, but they were all articles from White Dwarf. And then there was a big move to, you know, White Dwarf has gone through some transitions over the years. And White Dwarf has gone from, you know, they had a stance of where it was basically a catalog, which I don't think people liked.
You don't think? Paul, you were the most generous person in the world when it comes to that, because that weekly white dwarf, oh my gosh, was maybe the worst thing Games Workshop ever did.
I would say that
if there was a symbol for quote unquote the old GW, it was weekly white dwarf.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And when they brought it back to the monthly format, I did not get white dwarf back then unless I knew there was a rule or something coming out that was going to be put in there. But this new white dwarf makes me feel like a kid again. Like, you know, you remember when we were younger and you got white dwarf and it had like, it was like big magazine.
I felt like back in the early days, I say this is forever ago. I felt good because I had a subscription to white dwarf.
Yeah.
And then when it became a catalog, I didn't feel that way. And then it became it was weekly the White Dwarf, I felt less. And the weekly White Dwarf is when I no longer kept a subscription. Now they're back to an awesome format. We talked about this before, but before this last month, they were having, I mean, there was two or three painting articles, tutorials in there every month. There was great battle reports, good articles. But I think the evergreen stuff in there was the painting articles, because they were incredibly good and they didn't skip any steps, which is in the older stuff they would skip steps. Now they don't skip steps. But now they've decided to start releasing rules in there again, which is, it's a big draw. That's what we want. We want rules. We want change. We want cool stuff.
Can but I
it,
just
look? It hasn't let's been say, there.
Yeah, and like now. Now, White Dwarf now is I think back to where it was, and I think it's great. There's posters in there again. I love the posters.
Going back probably a decade, Ricky. Whoever said that a second ago was right.
Yeah, yeah. And what's funny is a buddy of mine just bought some old issues of White Dwarf from back when the Lord of the Rings game first came out, because he wanted some of those articles and stuff that were in there, and it had the Razorback cutaway schematic poster in it.
Yeah.
And he's like, here.
Oh, it was the Predator, right?
Predator, yeah. He's like, here, I think you might want this, right? And I was like, oh my God. I was losing my mind. I was like, I got to get a frame. I got to mat this. I got to hang it. I was all excited. And I'm telling you, I love the posters. I want every White Dwarf to have a poster, and I want at least one White Dwarf. Games Workshop, if you're listening, please give us rules for just a whole crew army. Please. Just give me that. You did it before.
You're gonna get it in Kill Team with the mercenaries.
Put it back in there.
Yeah, you got them in Kill Team now.
I need it for the whole thing. I need 40K. I need all the crew all the time. That needs to happen.
Well, that was an army bag, you know.
Yeah,
it was chicken.
That all happened like when I was checked out of the game. So I have no concept of crude as a standalone thing.
Yeah, they had
crude a mercenaries.
Mercenary army.
Now, chain fist on the sergeants, Val.
It was cool. Well, and there was a fan made Kroot mercenary army in 7th edition that was fantastic. It was super cool, super thematic. Gosh, just somebody tweak that and give it to me. I'll be happy. Mm-hmm. Like, I just want official rules. Give me a Kroot HQ and give me some fun rules.
We're kind of fanboying over the fact that White Dwarf is now going to have the chapter approved section in there. I don't know if they're, I can't remember if they're calling it the chapter approved or not, but there will be, I guess, beta rules, additional rules like this current month right now.
Well, they got in the sort of inaugural new formatted release, they had the Crimson Fists, yep, had their own whole new
with a new relic tactics and stuff. So they're committed to this. I think this is, if you don't currently pick up the magazine, check it out.
Apparently next month, so I guess for March already, they'll have stuff to do with assassins. So there'll be a whole new sort of index assassins is what it was teased at the end of this White Dwarf.
And you know what I like about this? Here's the thing I like about this. One, they now have a monthly format in which they can release rules instead of waiting to launch a whole new book. Two, if I don't have to buy every book, I don't have to buy every White Dwarf. If there's rules in there that I don't care about, I don't have to pick it up.
Get a sub, but have it come right to your house.
Oh no, I have a sub, but I'm saying if I don't want that, then I don't have to get it. But if I, you know, if my army is getting rules, then I can say, oh, here's 9 bucks. Look, I got new rules for my army and everything. You know, it's so much cheaper than paying 40, 50 bucks for a whole book. Whereas, you know, you just want to pick up the new rules for your models.
Is there a way to get a White Dwarf subscription where, you know, it comes in one of those like privacy envelopes where like
You actually can, but you have to set that up with customer service. Yeah.
Really?
No, you actually can't.
Are you trying to hide your white dwarfiness? Like, what is going on here?
If that is true, I am 100% going to be a white dwarf subscription.
I think you can. I think you can call customer service and tell them that you need a discreet delivery.
I'm going to need this on the down low.
Just make it look like it's a Playboy or something. I can't let anybody know it's a white dwarf.
I'm going to need this to look like Hustler.
Oh my god.
Well, I'm not kidding. I think you can get this set up this way.
I'm dialing this up tomorrow. If that is an option, then they just got themselves a new subscriber.
I need now, you. The only ask that I have
for the rules that they're putting in White Dwarf is like from a judge perspective, if it's going to contradict or something that's already existing in a codex or other rules. Like, there needs to be a follow-up to that, you know, whether it's FAQs or whatever. There needs to be some kind of official thing for that. And I'd love it if they made it like they used to, where you could kind of pull it out of the book. And, like, I don't know if it's perforation or whatever, but just having, like, an easier way to remove it from that so that you can just slip it in your codex, like, just to make it easier to carry around. That's like convenience ask that I would have for stuff like that.
More than anything, I think this does scream at me the desperate need for a 40K app that I would happily pay I would pay Netflix money for. Yep. I would easily pay Netflix money for an app that has all the rules in a nice place. It'd be glitchy at first. I don't care. Just give me something.
Something you can build official lists in. That's, you know, correct.
But, you know, that is. I assume this is like something akin to launching a rocket ship, because it is clearly difficult to pull off. And regardless, that is something I would pay a subscription for, no problem. So hopefully that's something that does come eventually. Because doesn't Sigmar have it? Doesn't that model literally exist in Age of Sigmar?
Yeah. There's like a 99-cent a month subscription service through there.
I just said I would pay $9.99. I literally just said I would pay $9.99.
Yeah. 10 times the amount.
In fairness, what you're asking for should cost $9.99 a month compared to what you get from the Sigmar app. Because the Sigmar app does not give you the rules for War Scroll battalions and stuff like that. You get the basic rules, and it's got an army builder in there. But the one thing about that Sigmar app that I think is absolutely bonkers and insulting, sorry GW, is that you can have the battle tome at the house with all the rules and those War Scroll battalions, but you can't, there's no way for you to like show that in the app. So if you want the rules for your War Scroll battalions in the app, you have to buy it
in the app. Digitally. Yeah.
I sympathize maybe a little bit with Games Workshop on this, because this is the tactile sort of recreation and hobby. So, like, you know, it is a bit of a throwback. At the end of the day, we're playing with actual physical models and toys and things.
And they have a model that they're sticking with, business model.
Exactly. And I'm sure they're one of the few successful publishers as far as print books is concerned that remains on Earth. However, I think that's probably more to do with the fact that you have to buy these books in a lot of cases to play the game. Maybe they're clinging to a model that isn't necessarily as effective for its clients as it once did. I'm just hoping that maybe one day it changes. I don't know. I think if I would love to buy a book that's so awesome about the orcs, and it's all the like pictures and background and maybe a campaign and all that kind of stuff. Like, I would love that as a book. Somebody can just flip through and, you know, imagine stuff by looking at. But when it comes to like this living, breathing game that I obsess over basically every waking hour of the day, you know, I'd much rather have the most up-to-date stuff in an easy way to do it. Like, I'm getting ready for the LVO, and one of my tasks is going to be consolidating all of the various FAQ PDFs into one PDF so that I can keyword search it and not have to thumb through, you know, 25 different PDFs. You know what I mean? Well, hobby hack for you guys. But so anyway, so this is just a desperate plea. I don't know how we got down this rabbit hole, but please charge me money and I will happily give it to you.
That's fair. So we also got the female commissar came up on the news today. It might have been yesterday.
And what a tastefully female. What a tastefully female commissar that is.
Yeah, I completely agree. I like the fact she has a pocket watch with an R on it. This is a weird fact. My wife actually got me a pocket watch for the holidays this year that has TPM on it across the front of it.
Sweet.
I know, right? No, it's pretty neat. I need to find more excuses to wear a pocket watch. I think becoming a commissar in the 41st millennium is probably a little extreme.
I don't know, Paul. You could always just go for the whole cosplay thing. You used to do that.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm all about it.
I do
bring it back. Just bring it back, dude.
Yeah.
I do like the pocket watch, but I particularly like the lack of heels for this female character.
She is practical.
She looks like a commissar. She's just, you know.
She seems to have come out of the School of Progenium.
I did not.
Very strict.
I didn't recognize it as a female model when I first looked at it.
Yeah.
And it took me a second, like, wow, this is really well done.
Well, that's kind of the thing is, like, they, you know, you see it a lot in sci-fi and fantasy. They think so that you can recognize something as female, they have to, you know, kind of really exaggerate.
Situate in certain
features
aspects.
And stuff. Yeah. Or they just go for, you know, just the wildly sexualized models and stuff. But, like, Sigmar, I think, has done a great job when they finally brought in female Stormcast Eternals. You know, they fit right in. They don't.
I would also like to say that, you know, like, we're playing a fantasy game where we also have, like, super ripped dudes and, like jacked, like, hyper-masculine guys. And I think there's a place for space babes as well. But I'm happy that not everything has to be space babes. You know?
Yeah.
I don't think everyone needs to be, you know, like, this perfect representation. But as far as an Imperial Guard character goes, they're going to be just normal people.
This is not an understated model at all. This is a very... It's a great model. I mean, and I'm not even saying that lightly, and I'm not trying to embellish what my feelings are. I think that once you take a second to once you kind of realize what the model is, you're like, oh wow, this is really well done. I mean, that's really good. I said it before, but I'll say it again. I think that's. But yeah, you're right. There is a place for all of that, especially when we're dealing with in a fantasy world. And it's really
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So it makes it more likely for me to buy it if it's tasteful like this, though.
Yeah, you don't have to hide it from your wife when she's like, "What's that?" And you're like, "Nothing. It's for a friend."
There's third party manufacturers for those types of models.
I came across that when trying to find some like croup like conversions and stuff.
Oh, man,
turns out there is an inappropriate croup model.
There's a whole bunch of slash fic.
Yeah, guys, it doesn't matter what you want. There is something inappropriate modeled out there for it. I promise. There's a company with an entire towel line that I jokingly linked to my buddy, and I think he bought some. I don't know.
Just watch out for that malicious scrap code, folks.
Yeah. But what I like about the model is the cover of the book, of the novel that's coming out, Honorbound, it's basically the same pose. So I think that's really cool. Like, if the book is good, like, I'm going to read the book, and, you know, if I like it a lot, you know, then I think it would be a really cool thing to have that model to go with it. You know, it kind of like a reminder of the book. So I think that's a really neat thing as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, looking forward to putting, especially with Imperial Guard stuff. I have a story. I'll share an anecdote and then we'll take a break.
Please.
So I'm painting my army for the Adepticon team tournament now. I'm sorry out there, everyone. I had to take a pause from the orcs. The orcs are coming as soon as this army is done. But I'm having to paint a whole new Imperial Guard army. And I did a kit bash on the Primaris Psyker model. So I had a metal Primaris Psyker model and I clipped off the end of his staff and I put the head of the staff from the Kaldor Ganger leader.
That's what I was going to ask you. I saw you sent the picture and I was like, is that from Kaldor? And so my question.
So the Kaldor has a staff and I clipped off the very tip of it, clipped off the Imperial symbol that's on the Primaris Psyker and glued them together. That paint handle with the assembly arms is awesome.
Yeah, I saw that in there. I was like, he's gluing plastic to metal. I bet that takes. Oh, that's why that's there. Okay,
no,
great.
I actually sit there, was trying to hold it like I did for, you know, 20 years or whatever.
And yeah.
Like just contemplating life and how many mistakes I've made and, you know.
Breathing very carefully.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hoping you don't sneeze.
I was like, wait, I have this assembly handle.
It's hilarious. Because how many times have you as a player or as a hobbyist like, you know, you're sitting there trying to hold it together and not move, and then your wife comes in and wants to talk to you.
Something happens. You breathe heavy or whatever.
Every time, yeah. My wife, I don't know what it is. She knows when I am trying to glue something together that's very precarious, and I just sit there and don't move and don't answer, and she keeps talking, and finally she just figures it out and walks away.
You're trying to super glue something.
Yeah, like 20 minutes later, I go, I'm so sorry. Yeah.
So a buddy of mine was doing some kit bashes for his LVO army. And he's telling me, like, I spent all day pinning this one arm. I'm like, dude, why didn't you just plastic glue it and use the assembly handle from GW? Like, you could have been done in 10 minutes. He's like, oh my goodness. Yes. Cause the arms on the assembly thing, they actually hold their shape. You can contort them into whatever position and they will hold their shape. It's really well done.
You had an actual scenario where that was a like very useful tool.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Several times.
Amazing. So, because that got cut out. Like, I got to say, that got mocked a lot online.
Because it looks silly, but it really works. It really, really works. I kit-bashed this Primaris Psyker. So clipped off the Eagle plastic, you know, put the plastic part on, had the assembly arm glue it there. It looks all right. While the glue is curing, I'm not having to hold it because the tool is holding it. I send out some pics. And one of my friends is like, what model is that? I've never seen it before. And I said, you're right. You've never seen this before because no one uses this Primaris Psyker because it has too many like details on it that somebody has to paint.
See, and that I really like that model.
Oh, it's a great model, but most guard players that I know don't use the Primaris Psyker model, maybe because they have four or five of them and they don't want the same model four or five times, or they use the Weird Vein Psykers, or they use some kit bash from whatever plastic parts they've got, which is all fine. I'm not judging that. What I'm saying is you don't see this particular model very often because either an aversion to using it. I think because it has a lot of details on it that maybe people get intimidated by. You know, I don't know. I'm using it because it looks so cool and because it's kind of uncommon and because I found a neat little kit bash to do with it. But I thought it was funny how this person had never seen it. And this is someone who studies 40K models or wasn't familiar with it. He probably seen it, just wasn't familiar with it. But when I see a model like this, like this Commissar model that is familiar enough, but still decidedly unique because of the gender and probably the fact that it's going to be the way it's posed and the fact that you can probably switch out the if you want to put a whatever war gear options are on it, you probably it's probably going to be easy to do that. I think it's great to be able to incorporate that stuff into the Imperial Guard army range.
I just think that it's a good model, and I like it a lot better than the current kind of plastic Commissar that's out. I think that
there's a couple some great Commissars, but this is unique. I mean, this you can use it for multiple things probably.
Yeah, there's one that's like the Lord Commissar model, which I think is fantastic. I actually have one, and I painted it up just because I loved it. And then there's the new plastic one that kind of, you ever do like character creation on a video game, and if you put like the slider all the way to one side, it makes one of the features just ridiculously overdone. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's kind of how I feel about that Commissar. I think they did that with the sword and with his hat. This is like,
I like it.
We're going to put the hat slider all the way.
He's got a plasma pistol, so you know he's a bad man pajama.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that goes without saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think that the understated aspect of that female Commissar model makes it more appealing to me. I like how it looks. I like how simple it is. And I like how appropriately dimensioned everything is. Like the composition of the model is just really
I think it's going to be something cool to add into to guard armies that haven't gotten a lot of love. But let's take a quick break. Then we'll come back, continue our road to the LBO coverage, talk about some armyless tech. We'll come back in just a minute.
We're sponsored by Firmaterra. With their study, lightweight and portable tables, you can make war anywhere. Please visit them at www.firmaterra.com.
Hey everybody, we are back. Still got Val.
First billing.
Chris Morgan and Ricky Addington.
Yo.
Why are we not talking more about Titanicus?
We can't. Yeah, no. Yeah, it's, I think it's now a pretty much complete game. Or I shouldn't say complete, but it's playable with options and stuff.
It is playable. Yeah. It is awesome now. It is super fun now.
It's picked up a lot in my area too. Several people in my group or the people I'm associated with are playing, and they have hobby days where they just build Titans. They just build little tiny Titans.
Dude, the models are so detailed. I thought you would lose a lot, right? Like from the scaling down of them, but there's a ton of detail in them. They're super fun. I'm gonna be honest, the Warhounds are, I love them. They're my favorite model in the whole range.
Yeah, they're so awesome.
And I love the way they play in the game too. They're so fast. They bring a lot to the game that it did not have when it was just you and your buddy with two warlords each trying to, you know, shoot and gallery it. But they are a fun unit to have in the game. And with Titan Death coming out, they're going to have a maniple that is like, I think it's like 3 to 6 Warhounds, and they get to add to their armor roll. So it's going to be, what was the Legion back in the Horus Heresy? Like the Ember Wolves. There was a Legion in the Horus Heresy.
You went deep.
Dude. Oh, no. Yeah, dude. Deep, no. Dude.
I don't think anyone knows what you're talking about right now.
Okay, yeah, there's like one dude out there who knows. But anyway, in the Horus Heresy, there was a Legion.
He's sitting up straight right now.
Yeah, I had to readjust here. So there was a Legio called the Ember Wolves, and they had 90 Warhounds, apparently, was like their size. And that is it. They had no other Titans except for Warhounds. But what they did, they mounted these basically harpoons onto all their Warhounds, and they would
swarm. You're talking about the ones that were with the World Eaters?
Yeah, I think so. They were on Istvan.
Ursa's Claws, I think.
The Ursa's Claw is the name of the harpoon things that they used. Yeah. So basically, they would harpoon like warlords and reavers and lock them down and bring them down and let the guys get in there and like take them over and stuff and capture them. So my buddy is going to use that maniple that's coming out. Maniples in Adeptus Titanicus is basically like a formation, right? So there's a maniple that is just all warhounds, and they get bonuses for just being a whole maniple of warhounds. And he's going to make an entire warhound army, and we're going to model some harpoons onto them and do that. So we're super pumped about it. But I've been enjoying the crap out of that game.
Anyone who's still with us, I have no idea what's happening right now.
Just listen, if you haven't played Titanicus,
I know what's going on. I'm with you, Ricky. Thank you.
The one guy here who does. I appreciate it. As the crickets sound. Paul, wake up. Paul, wake up.
No, I actually do like the game. And when you're talking about the models, it's almost like a one-to-one conversion from from the actual 40K Titans to the Titanicus game. Like all the parts are the same. There's no loss of detail in the models. And that's really pretty remarkable.
Yeah, the warlords, you feel like you're just building like a miniature version of the 40K scale one. The Warhounds do not, and I say that in the best way possible, because if you've ever put together a Warhound model and you're working on each toe, and each toe has something like 12 parts or something to it, and there's 8 toes, like, because each piston in the toe is 2 parts. And there is something like 4 pistons per toe. I can't remember. It's been a while since I put it together. But it was like I put the whole Warhound together in less time than I put the toes together. And so the Titanicus model does not have that for the Warhound. So
yeah, did you watch any like the development stuff about how they designed the Titans and things?
No, I didn't even see that. I want to see that.
Yeah, there's some really cool stuff out there. Basically, for the mini Warlord Titan, they just used the digital file and scaled it down. But they couldn't do that for the Warhound, because that one was made and casted from a large, you know, 3D example.
Right.
So they had to build a new sculpt in plastic digitally, based off of the old one that they plan on scaling up to use for new Warhound sculpts. So there's going to be a new way to put it together.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really
neat. Trying to make it all so that like anything you can play in one game will show up in the other game. All they have to do really is scale it up and add some details.
While we're talking about Titanicus, I want to mention that one of our sponsors, Discount Games Inc., has a large selection of Titanicus stuff. And I believe, at least during the holidays, they were offering some additional rebates on that kind of stuff. So it's probably worth checking them out if you are looking to get into that game. And they also had some Battle Forces left from the holidays. Check them out if you have not already. They're an absolute awesome sponsor of ours and continue to support the show, which is good for everyone. So please check them out if you're interested in getting any of the stuff that we're talking about right now.
Great segue, Paul.
Do what I can.
Dude, that was like, it's like you do this a lot. That was great.
Well, it's a good segue that I woke up.
Because none of us are allowed to do segues.
If I want to talk about one other cool thing it's like a value add to folks. So I received recently an art print of Dante from the book Dante, where he's coming down on the rock. It's the cover of the book.
Oh, man.
It's an epic print. Epic print from Warhammer Art.
It's nice.
It came securely packaged. It's a really high quality, thick paper. It just feels really good. It came with a certificate of authenticity. It's amazing. But it's
in. I got one of theirs for the, do you remember the cover for that Horus Heresy novel? Fear to Tread, where it's got Sanguinius and the demon fighting with that skeleton castle in the background and like fire coming from the sky.
That's a beautiful picture. This thing is...
I got that one from them.
It's large. It's movie poster size. So I'm thinking, how am I going to get this on my wall? How am I going to get this... but it's not exactly movie poster size, so it doesn't fit in a standard frame. So I'm thinking, how am I going to get this on my wall and give it the framing that it deserves on the cheap? Well, what I did was I had Michaels, this is, you know, hobby store, cut me a custom mat for it to fit in a standard size frame. And then I used their coupon, their 40% off. And sometimes they offer, you know, 50, 60% off the actual frames themselves, but use their web coupon, which is 40% off any item to get the frame. So I paid, you know, next to nothing for the mat, got the frame at 40% off. And now I've got this beautiful thing I can put on my wall.
It looks great, too. And it looks much better on your wall than it did when it was just laying on your gaming table. Because I remember when you sent when you got it, you had it laid out on your, you know, the picture you sent us was laid out on your gaming table. And my first thought was, Paul just got like full fanboy for Blood Angels and got a play mat that was just, you know, a Blood Angel picture. And
I would do that.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And I was like, that's totally a Paul or Chris thing to do. And I just accepted in my head that that's what it was. It was a playmat. And I was like, nice.
I love how I get thrown in that. He's not wrong, by the way.
I know I'm not wrong. But it was in my head, it was the most ridiculous thing ever that somebody would have that. But I thought that is something that you two would do. And I was okay with it. I was like, well, of course they would do that. I mean, that's not my taste, but, you know, okay. And then I was informed that
I was concerned, like, how am I going to do this justice? Because I don't want this to, you know, of course you don't want to tack it up on the wall. This thing is, this thing has got high quality. I mean, it feels, you know, really nice. It's like you just want to do some justice. And I thought, how can I do this? I bet I can get a mat. The only thing custom here is the mat. And if you're actually handy, you could probably do it yourself, but let a professional do it so you make get it right and then fit in a standard frame and then put it on your wall and you're good to go.
Yeah, because having done like professional photo mounting and stuff that was part of my last job while I was in college. It is nerve wracking when you get a really nice print of something and you're trying to mount it onto a board. And you're trying to get like the bubbles and stuff out. There's like these special rollers and things you use. Let me tell you though,
if you have anything of value, never mount it on a board ever. Do not. Period. As a one sheet collector, don't do that to yourself.
Why? I don't know anything about this. Why?
Because if once you stick it to something that's supposed to be there forever, then it has to live there forever. And then it has no transitional value to someone else who doesn't want it on that forever.
Okay. I'm tracking.
Well, why would you get something like that thinking you're going to give it to somebody else?
Oh, no. Because when I pass it on to future generations, I want them to do whatever they want after I'm done enjoying it.
Because when he passes it to his son and his son's wife does not like that frame and refuses to let him put it in the living room where it belongs, redo the house.
That's right. You got to have the Red Room and the Star Wars Room. And
there you go. And guys, just while we're on the topic of this, do you know what does not fit any sort of standardized frame available in the United States? White dwarf poster.
Anything you get white, from white dwarf, England?
Any white dwarf poster ever. I don't even know.
Well,
that
see,
the
this
internet
is what I'm talking about. You get the you find a standard frame that you can get on the cheap, and you get a custom mat for it. The mat is going to be way less expensive. The mat is going to be way less expensive than if you were to get a whole custom frame job.
Oh yeah, you know what I ended up doing though, and I mean it's. Come on, at the end of the day, it's a White Dwarf poster. But I did find a very close frame on Amazon, and I just had to trim a tiny little bit off the top and the bottom of the poster, and it fits in there great. And we hang them in the shop. So each time we get a White Dwarf poster, we just get one
cool.
of those
no,
frames.
It's worth it. I think if you find something that's going to look great in your hobby area, because you look at this stuff, and it's like, what's going to inspire you to do a little bit more? And I think this is pretty awesome. I know we're talking about custom framing for the last 5 minutes, and I apologize, but I wanted to pass that on about how to get this. Because if you're going to spend, if you're going to invest a little bit,
I accept your apology, Paul.
Yeah, well, if you're going to invest a little bit in the art, you want to display it, and I thought passing on how to display it on the cheap might be of value to folks. So that's it. Now let's talk about tournaments.
Ooh.
LVO. I know we're supposed to have a new player segment, and about the segment is supposed to be about how to wrestle the momentum back. So maybe we'll talk a little bit about that after. I think, Chris, you got a couple of announcements about the LVO, and then I want to talk a little bit about how to salvage a game that's going south.
Awesome. So, yeah, I think just a general reminder for people that the deadline for list submission for the LVO championships is coming up on Friday the 25th. So if you're listening to this on Friday the 25th and you haven't uploaded your list, stop what you're doing, pull your car over, do it right now. The list submission guidelines, of course, are on frontlinegaming.org. There's a tutorial video and stuff available. Make sure that you do that. There's also a similar deadline on sending in approvals for models and conversions and things. If you have a non-standard conversion, something that you think might be questioned by your opponent or something, make sure you pass it off by the judges. So send an email to contact@frontlinegaming.com. Then it'll get forwarded to all of us and we'll give you the approval to use it. There are some people who would be very grateful that they got the question answered in advance instead of having their model removed from the table. And then just kind of as a final reminder, if you have third party models in your army, and you make it to the top eight, you're not going to be able to use those because we can't put third-party models on GW's stream for the championships. So have an alternative or have a buddy let you borrow something so you can still play your army. They just can't, you know, advertise somebody else's models on GW's platform by putting those on the stream. So make sure that your models are, if you're planning on getting the top eight, it's not going to affect a lot of people. Just make sure that you are doing what you can to make sure you can still play. Those are the big things to keep in mind.
All good points. Salvaging a game when it's going south. This is a kind of difficult topic, but I think I want to frame it with that most people don't recognize the game is slipping away from them until it's too late. Does this sound like a situation that you've been in?
I'd call that the end of my deployment phase.
It could be, man. It could be.
I rarely run into that because I play Imperial Knights a lot. So I every turn have that realization. When
you have all your models and you have none of your models.
it is like the countdown to New Year's, you know, definitely 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and then, you know, handshake.
Well, I mean, we've talked about deployment. So, but Val, that's a very good point because a lot of people do kind of give away too much in the deployment stage of the game and then don't realize that they're just going through the motions for the rest of the game. And so if you can get past that.
Yeah, I was sort of joking there, but my Tau experience, which we've beaten to death on the show, is I just feel like they're very technical in the deployment phase and I would just bone it up every time. And so I would like lovingly place my last miniature, step away from it like it was my masterpiece, and then survey the rest of the table and realize I'd lost. And that's a horrible place to be, so I don't recommend it to anybody.
Well, I mean, again, this is all very good points. I think that certain armies rely on that phase to be competitive more than others. I think that anything that doesn't want to be assaulted or can't stand up to a charge or relies on shooting, which a lot of armies do, you don't want to really punt And that's another. How do we keep having so many sports references on this show?
I don't know. Like you say it, I just pretend I know what you're saying, and we just keep going.
I'm right there with you, Paul.
Sports ball.
You don't want to be. You always want to be converting. You don't want to be punting. Anyway, maybe punt is a universal term. But in that phase, if you can master the deployment phase for your army, and I think you can be a little bit more fast and loose. Like I don't really care if my death company are a little bit out of position. I mean, I care about if as long as they're on the line and as far forward and as close to you as they possibly can be. That's all I need to know. Same way with orcs. You know, or whatever. No, but
well, it's also nice to play armies that I can correct my deployment thanks to a warlord trait like orcs or a stratagem like Eldar. So there are ways to sort of pull it back if you go, oh boy, I made a terrible mistake. Yeah, there's armies that are more. There are definitely armies that are more forgiving than others. I think that's another thing about 40K.
Well, I think knowing that, and not to beat that to death, because we've had it be the subject of a couple other shows, but if you can get to that point to where you're comfortable with you're not going to make any mistakes in that, then what? So you've avoided that, but somehow the opponent has outfoxed you. You find yourself in a compromising position. The dice go completely against you in round one and two. Then what do you do?
I mean, I having come across a situation like this pretty recently at a tournament that I went to where you know, I was, you know, things are bad when people are coming around your table, they're your buddies or whatever, and they look at it and they're like, wow, dude, you're on the ropes, aren't you? And and you're like coming up with the strategies
when
in your head right there.
You haven't moved out of your deployment zone. You're not on any objectives. You have none of the kill more checked on your spreadsheet, on your sheet.
Yeah, one of my favorites is when my buddy walks up to me, like his game is over and he's already drinking a beer, and he walks up and says, "What turn are you on?" And you're like, "Two or one or whatever." And his eyebrows just raise and he smiles and walks away. That's usually when you know that it's not going well.
Wrong.
I get that a lot.
I ended up winning that game. Now, how I won that game was deciding what were the achievable things that I could still do, focusing on those, giving up on all of the other things that I couldn't do, and focusing on the things that I could. So, I mean, in those situations, you don't want to go for the wild, shotgun blast toward every single thing you could possibly get if all the dice went well for you and if you made all of your saves from this time going forward. Like those moments are not the times to go for the big risk strategy. I think in those moments, you need to focus on what is achievable and devote everything you can towards that.
Yeah. I think to use another sports analogy, you know, I think a lot of people that say you hit a bad shot off the tee in golf. Now you're 100 yards down the fairway, which means not as far down the fairway as you'd hoped.
Okay.
100 yards sounds pretty far though.
Yeah. I was like, that sounds pretty good for me.
Okay. So maybe you're 50 yards down the fairway. Maybe you're past
that like the equivalent of rolling a three on a 12 inch charge.
That's yeah. Like okay. That. That's good.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
All right. Now, good.
What often will happen at that moment is that you will then square yourself over the ball and swing as hard as you can. And this will often lead you to more disaster. And really, the right thing to do there is to...
Are you going to overshoot? You're going to something?
Yeah, slice that ball even harder into the woods if you aren't already in the woods. So that's all good. Really, the right move to do there is just try and make a nice swing and get your ball back into play. And that way, you can hopefully pull it back at a later time. But you're already in deep doo-doo at that moment. And so I think to your point, you know, not overreacting to the scenario and trying to go for that, like swinging out of your shoes, one in 100 shot immediately isn't necessarily what you need to do unless you've really sold yourself down the river. Just trying to look constructively at what you still have and how you can play to the mission is really critical at that moment.
Can I jump in because, here for a second?
Well, I was just going to say, because in the fullness of the game, you've got, you know, six or seven turns. So, like, even though it might be second turn, it looks bad. Well, there's a lot more game to play, and don't lose sight of that.
I think that's a great point, because you need to really be in command of when you need to take that 10% shot. To when it's like, oh my goodness, my only play is this thing if I convert 1 out of 10 times. And if you do that prematurely, then 90% of the times you failed and you've dug yourself even a deeper hole.
Yeah, and I think when you hear a lot of like when you hear about games that are like, you know, pulled back from the brink or whatever, it's a lot of time the player, and this goes to not just 40K, but a lot of different situations, is that the person doesn't overreact and overplay the limited hand that they might have. So you really do have to look at what are the parameters for success, and with the tools that you got left, how can you do that? And it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, I'm going to take this 1 in a million shot at eliminating my opponent's best unit. There's an example of this, which I think we've referenced on the show quite a lot, which would be Brandon Grant at the SoCal Open in the final round, loses his Castellan at the top of the turn. And then he proceeds to use what's left of his army to, you know, eventually go on and win the tournament. And if you want to witness sort of in action pulling it back, that would be a really great example of it. And there's both, you know, analysis videos on YouTube as well as the actual full game available to go watch. It's a really fantastic example of someone keeping their cool, not overplaying their hand after they've taken a crushing blow, because that shouldn't have happened to him, and going on to win the game anyway.
With the ITC missions is actually measurable, because you're going to get a lot of your points from scoring one or scoring more objectives in killing a unit or killing more. And sometimes only killing one is killing more.
Yeah.
And sometimes just making sure your opponent doesn't kill more than you is a small victory in that. And in a turn that you can't make something happen, sometimes it's good enough just to make sure your opponent doesn't make something happen that turn.
That's so a good point also.
A lot of times instead of trying for that Hail Mary shot, maybe move that unit that's kind of hurting, move them out of line of sight to prevent your opponent from getting his points.
Measure range. What I see people don't do enough. Like when pre-measuring first came into the game, because you remember back in the aughts, you couldn't pre-measure.
You mean back when the game had skill?
If you declared you were going to fire your weapon at a unit and that weapon was out of range, you couldn't fire. You wasted your shot.
That's when blue collar America was the best at 40K, because everybody that hung sheetrock, cut any sort of lumber or anything, those guys could hit you exactly where they wanted, and you're just they're like, what the crap?
I don't think it was 40K, but definitely guessing the ranges of my cannons in fantasy battles, that has taught me how long a foot is for the rest of my life. That's for sure.
40K used to be that way too. I remember the Basilisk had what was G48, which meant guess the range at up to 48 inches or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it had a G, and that meant you had to guess the range of where your blast marker was going to go.
Where I'm going is that measure the range. If this unit can only move 6 and then fire 36 or whatever, then that means if you don't want to get shot by them, you need to be outside of that range. And you don't have to estimate. You can bring out your tape measure and check it out. That is sporting. That is not an unsportsmanlike move. That is completely within the bounds of the game. And sometimes that's what you need to do.
I almost think when people do that, I almost think it's better sportsmanship sometimes, because they will, especially like before assaults happen and stuff, is when, you know, when they'll pre-measure and we'll be like, all right, we agree that's a 9-inch charge, or you know, we're moving it, and when everybody's like, yep, that's it. Because there's nothing more awkward than not pre-measuring like a charge, and then you roll the dice and then you have the argument.
Especially it's like 8¾ inches or something.
Right, yeah. So, you know, I think that's good sportsmanship 90% of the time is pre-measuring.
Yeah, it absolutely is. But
I
think being aware of threat ranges and how... I know as recently as I was playing a guy who had, what are they, the Wraith Blades? Like they're actually a popular unit now. And it was the first time I'd seen someone use them, big, massive unit of them. And I just, you know, I really carefully measured all my boys out and my weird boys and made sure I was far enough away. And for whatever reason, I just forgot that what's the double the movement spell that you can do, or it's an Eldar trick.
Oh, like warp time, but I can't think of what it is.
Quicken or something.
Quicken. Thank you. So yeah, I just for whatever reason didn't think that you could quicken the those guys. Like he had shining spears. I was like, oh, he's gonna quicken those guys. Well, he quickened the other ones, and so he was well within range of destroying my entire army. And so it was just because I wasn't aware or didn't think through what his actual threat range was with that unit, and I got worked really easy.
A little bit more difficult to peg because you can't account for all the psychic powers or whatever that, or I should say you can't.
You can't.
You're right.
It's advanced class.
You can. You're right. Yeah. You can. I think that what we sometimes often don't do is get that premeditated about it. Like, I need to be completely out of range. I need to be immune to you right now. And how do I do that? I can be out of line of sight. I can be out of range, and I need to get in this vehicle. You know, I need to conserve. I need to be conservative or whatever. And it's okay to do those measurements.
And I think what I was trying to get at is that a lot of times I get myself in trouble because I think to myself, well, this will do, or it's close enough. And so you got to go that extra step, which is maybe ask your opponent, hey, is there a way, how far can these guys get? And a lot of times people will say, be very frank with you, like, oh, well, their base movement is X, but I can also, you know, do a stratagem. I can do all these other things. And you will realize that, oh, wow, it's not, I don't have to be, you know, 18 inches away. I got to be 2 feet away from these guys or whatever it might be. Because otherwise you'll lovingly place that last model, think that you're perfectly fine, and then wind up getting rocked by some really good combat units or whatever.
You mentioned that communication is key. So you could walk your dudes behind a wall, but this guy still can see them. And if you just move them a quarter of an inch further, your max move or whatever, you might have been completely out of line of sight. That communication is critical. It's a little bit different of a discussion, but that communication is critical.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the challenge part of that communication is critical too when it's necessary. Just because somebody says that something that you think is a little sketchy is the way that it is, doesn't mean that it is. I mean, I've had situations where someone has whipped out their tape measure, they flip it around so I can't see it. They do this weird wonky measure where they bend it, you know, and they're like, all right. And then they proceed to move their 12 inch move a good 17 inches.
And that's still different. Yeah. That's a little bit different of a discussion. Also, we're talking about like, how can you take control of the situation? You can't necessarily control that, but what you can do is look at what the facts are as they are on the table, and having that communication with the opponent is going to assist in that.
The prescience to challenge when something, you know, when you are paying attention, you are trying to be in control, and when you are trying to be on the back foot, you know, it's one thing to be accommodating and understanding. It's not unsportsmanlike to double check though.
Yeah. And I would say that if you're in the situation where you're super on the back foot and you just had your socks knocked off your feet, it's probably because you didn't do one of these things very well. So like, now's not the time to like just throw caution to the wind and aggressively move and get frustrated. I think people call it going on tilt. Yep. Now's the time to really slow down as best you can.
Oh, great point.
Try and get a grip and actually do these things with the correct detail, because now you're not out of the game yet. Well, you might be, but you know, it's not over yet. And to be able to, you know, pull it back, you're going to actually have to play a much more perfect game than you did before. So in order to do that, you got to communicate. You got to make sure that if you think you're out of range, that you actually are out of range. If you think you're in cover, that you actually are in cover.
Don't guess on the things when you have the potential to have perfect information. That is what everyone in every aspect strives for. They want that perfect information. And when you can get it, take it.
And if you can't get it, do something so terrible that your opponent buys you a beer and you get to drink for free.
Solid advice, Ricky.
That has definitely been demonstrated every time I've been in the same room as Ricky.
Yeah, 100%.
Strong. But I guess where I'm going with that is when you have that perfect information, then you're going to make better decisions, or you should be able to make better decisions. And that's going to help you get into back into the game, such as specifically dealing with the LVO and ITC missions is the kill more and hold more. Like if you can't effectively get out there and hold more, then you don't want to overextend yourself, because it's going to basically, if you are out there, you know, in the wind, then it's going to, if you overextend even in turn one or turn two, it's pretty much nailing down in turn three and four that you're not going to be able to compete for those points because you've lost your units. Am I on the right track with that?
Oh yeah, I think so anyway. But you know, what do I know? but you know, I think there's another thing to really think about is, you know, oh, and we could talk on the subject of going first or second, like that could be a whole nother thing on that. But that's something to think about as well, is when you're playing these games, you really want to think about even if you're going first or second, so that you don't end up getting yourself just on the back foot or right out of the gate, because some armies want you to go first. You know, some players, when they deploy, they will want you to go first. And if you do go first, right out of the gate, you're on the back foot and you could potentially play right into their hands. So that's something you want to start kind of paying attention to as well, to see if you set up to go first and your opponent is wanting you to go first, because they're wanting you to get closer or just get out in the open. Those are things that you could really just play right into somebody's hand if you do that. So that's something to watch out for as well.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that realizing when you really are in a bad situation is something we do too late. And that's kind of how I kicked off the discussion, and then how to claw back into it, and then trying to always have as much perfect information as possible. And thankfully, in this game, we can get a lot of it. We can ask our opponent what the stratagems are. We can measure. We can do pre-measuring. We can have that communication with the opponent with, can you see me? Can you not see me? Well, let's agree on the distance I need for this charge right now. So you can make these informed decisions, and that's, I think, the biggest way to climb back into a game is taking into account all that perfect information that you can get just from surveying what's on the table, using your tape measure, the physics involved in the stuff, and the communication with your opponent. Not trying to obscure what you're doing at all with them, but just having that real frank conversation with them. What is the range here? Can you see me? What's my charge? What's your charge? Do I get cover from this, you know, before it becomes a gotcha moment?
Yeah, and I think it's also important to, you don't have to be a mathematician or anything, because I suck at math, but it is a good thing to just kind of be sure you have a good understanding of kind of what the odds are of certain things happening. So, you know, like when you're trying to plan, you know, to get out of trouble and something, you kind of want to know the odds of how likely you are to make something happen versus trying some Hail Mary pass. There's another sports reference. You see what I did there?
It's a Blood Bowl. That's actually a Blood Bowl.
Oh, Blood Bowl. Yeah, it's a Blood Bowl reference. So we can go into that.
Okay. Oh, I get it. Okay.
But you know, you don't want to overextend yourself when you got, like, you know, a 1 in 36 chance of actually making it happen. Whereas if you go do this, which isn't, you know, go sit on this objective,
it's only a 1 in 24.
Yeah, that's, you know, fine. Yeah, you got to figure out what kind of odds you want to play, and you got to figure out there's times where you want to make something happen, you need to get somewhere, but you know, you don't want your opponent to charge you next turn, so you got to figure just how long of a charge range you're comfortable accepting him rolling. So there's just things like that that are kind of important to think about as well.
That's great. Well, thanks for joining us on this kind of a bit of a meander on topics today. But there's a ton that's come out, and then we're barreling towards the LVO, but there's still a lot of other events going on out there. Val, I know there's something you want to bring up.
Yeah, absolutely. So it'll lead up to the LVO down under. The Australians have sort of their version of the LVO, the conclusion to their ITC season. It's called CanCon. I've got some great friends that I met at the ETC, and they've started a really great streaming channel called the Down Under Network. They'll be covering CanCon, and on, I guess, what will be here would be Saturday night, Eastern time, about 9 p.m. I'll be going up on the stream to talk about what will be their final pairing, and the championship. So the winner of CanCon actually wins a full boat, airfare plus ticket to, LVO 2020.
Oh, wow.
So the following year. So it's a crazy awesome grand prize. It's the pinnacle of sort of the 40K year in Australia, and I get to go on the stream and talk about some of the really cool advanced stats that they're going to be pulling from the tournament for the whole thing. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to come home from a practice GT that day and then hop on the stream. It'll just be my voice, I think. I don't think my floating head will be on the screen, but we can.
That's for the best.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I'm pretty good. So at any rate, so please tune in again. That's Down Under Network. It'll start probably for us North Americans. I guess the coverage actually would start on Friday, because they're kind of like a day and a half ahead. It's crazy. I never really realized what time it is right now in Australia, and it blew my mind.
Like 4 p.m.
It's like 4 p.m. tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it starts on Friday. And these guys are great, too. They're really dedicated to their craft. They've got a lot of overlays. They'll have full tournament coverage, so they'll have the main table, but also get updates from the rest of the tournament. It's going to be a great time. So tune in if you can. It's going to be simulcast on a bunch of different streams. If you are subbed on Twitch to any sort of any of the 40K streams that are out there, they'll probably be carrying it, or you can go right to them again, Down Under Network.
Well, if you send me a link, I'll put it in the show notes so people can hopefully find it there.
Can do.
Yeah, guys, thanks y'all for joining me. And the Aussies have always been cool with us, so happy to pitch anything they got going on down there.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, y'all have a good rest of y'all's night, and we will talk again next week.
I'm just going to end the show how I started. Crimson Paladins.
No. This may be the most ADHD episode ever, and I loved it.
Have a good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks for listening.